Well, good morning or afternoon or whenever it is that you are watching this. I want to welcome you to Hill Village Bible Church service and preaching on Mother's Day. And it is a privilege to be preaching on Mother's Day. I'm going to be referring to my experience as a mother, I guess. probably not. I'll be referring to a lot to my mother and also my sister who is a mother today. Extremely blessed, well, by God with the mother that he's given me, with what I can say is really one of my best friends. We have gone through stages where, you know, she was the mother, where she was the authority and such, but it is a blessing that at this stage of life, I can say my mother's one of my best friends. I've told the teens before that my mother is extremely loyal, almost to the fault. My mother's the kind of person where if I were to murder someone, she would come and help me bury the body. And so I'm not sure if that is a blessing, but I will consider that as a blessing as it is. But as we consider Mother's Day and a message on that, I'm going to ask you to turn to 2 Kings chapter 4. We're going to look at a passage that I believe most of us are familiar with, and it's the message of the Shunammite woman. Now, this message isn't really about how to be a mother or mother attributes, but we're looking at the story of a mother. And the title of this message is When Your Greatest Blessings Becomes Your Greatest Trial. And before we read our text, let's go to the Lord and pray. Father God, we come before you thankful for how you provide for us, how you lead, how you guide, and also that you have given us mothers who care for us, who love for us. And I thank you for my mother, who is hopefully will be watching this message soon. But just for the blessing that she's been in my life and how she has prepared me for service for you. And Lord, as we look at this text today, what I pray is that you show yourself today. This message is not really just for mothers. It's for all of us. And I just pray, God, that you use these words today to honor and glorify yourself, because ultimately you are the main point of all these messages. And so, Father, please guide me, direct me, and work in our hearts today to draw closer to you. In your name I pray, amen. So I'm going to first off say this. We're going to be talking about Elisha, but I will probably say Elijah. And also, this is the Shunammite woman, not the Shulamite woman. So, when I do make those mistakes, please forgive me. 2 Kings chapter 4, we're at a stage in Elisha's ministry where he's known, he's traveling around, he's preaching, and he's starting to get some help. People are noticing his ministry. So let's start at 2 Kings chapter 4, and we're going to look at verse 8. 2 Kings 4, verse 8 says, "And it fell on the day that Elisha passed to Shunem, where was a great woman, and she constrained him to eat bread. And so it was that as often as he passed by, he turned in thither to eat bread. And she said unto her husband, Behold now, I perceive that this is a holy man of God, which passeth by us continually. Let us make a little chamber, I pray thee, on the wall, and let us set him there a bed, and a table, and a stool, and a candlestick. And it shall be, when he cometh to us, that he shall turn in thither." It's interesting that as we learn the story of the Shunammite woman, we never learn her name. We don't really know much except for where she's from. She's from the town of Shunem, which is about 10 miles southwest of the Sea of Galilee. And so, a small little town in the northern part of Israel. And as Elisha was going around traveling, preaching throughout Israel, a land that was not being faithful to the Lord, here's this woman. It says that she was a great woman. This does not refer to her size. This refers to her wealth, her power. Her husband was probably a farmer who had a large land, a lot of people working for him, but also refers that she was well-known, probably well-respected. And we learn a little bit about her character, that she sees this man named Elisha who's traveling around preaching, proclaiming these truths. And she says, "Hey, since you're passing by, why don't you come and eat? She provides for the man of God. And this isn't just a one-time thing. It says over and over again that as he makes regular occasion to pass by the town of Shunem, that he would make it practice that, all right, going to go to Shunem, time to eat at the Shunammite woman's place again. And it came to the point that this happened so often that she said to her husband, hey, why don't we build a prophet's chamber? So you guys might have heard of that term before. It comes from this area, this the area of passage. He says, let's build a prophet's chamber for this prophet because I see that this is a man of God. Kind of what I notice here in this text is that this Shunammite woman, what does she value? What is she willing to sacrifice for? Is the Lord. I'm sure she was kind and generous to other people. I'm sure she was helpful to the people in her community. And we'll see that in a second, actually. But what's interesting that she specifically notices that this is a man of God. And I want to help him. What this shows me is that she had a heart to serve the Lord. And we don't know what else that she did, but it made me think of Matthew chapter 25. If you go to Matthew chapter 25 and verse 37, we're in a parable, we're in a story where the king is rewarding his servants. If you look at Matthew chapter 25 and verse 37, says this, that the king responded to his servant, says that you have blessed me, you have clothed me, you have fed me, you have been good to me. And the righteous servants are like, well, Lord, when do we do that? Look at Matthew chapter 25, verse 37. It says, then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me. And so you may say, oh, well, you know, I'm not called to be a preacher. I can't go and be a prophet out there to the people. I can't go and do those kind of things. How can I serve the Lord? We get this parable and we have the example of the Shunammite woman where we see if you serve the people of God, you're serving the Lord. That you don't have to be on the stage being a public speaker. Not everyone is gifted for that. And there's too many of us who are not gifted who still do it. But just because you're not on a stage in front of people doesn't mean you can't serve God. And this Shunammite woman, what did she do? She saw a man of God. She said, you know what? I'm going to help him out. I'm going to feed him. I'm going to be a blessing to him. I'm going to be an encouragement to him. I'm going to make this little room for him so that he doesn't have to travel through the night, but that he can just spend the night here. And I can speak as a missionary kid that in our travels, we have met many people like that, or many churches who've had a prophet's chamber or something. And it's nice to not eat at McDonald's and go to someone's home and eat a real meal and not to sleep in a hotel, but in a real bed with nice clean sheets. It really is a blessing as you're out serving the Lord, traveling as such, that you can have a little taste of home. And so we see that the Shunammite woman, she had a heart to serve the Lord. And even though she wasn't a prophet or a prophetess, traveling around preaching and bringing great revival and such, says, here's how I can help. As we continue on in our text, in 2 Kings chapter 4, let's turn to verse 11. And what we notice is that this is a continual thing that happened. It wasn't a one-time thing, but that it became kind of customary that as we go through Shunem, we're going to stop at her place, we're going to eat some good food, and we're going to take a rest there. And so as this goes on and on and on, we get to verse 11, it says, and it fell on the day that he came thither, and he turned into the chamber and lay there. And he said to Gehazi, his servant, call the Shunammite woman, the Shunammite. And when he called her, she stood before him. And he said to him, say now unto her, behold, thou hast been careful for us with all this care. What is to be done for thee? What is thou be spoken for to the king or to the captain of the host? And she answered, I dwell among my own people. And so we get this interesting interaction between Elisha, Gehazi, the servant, and the Shunammite woman. Where the Shunammite woman, she's being very kind, being a great host, and he says that you've been very careful for us, or that you're full of care for us. You care about our ministry, what we're trying to do. What can we do to bless you? What can we do to kind of thank you for all the help that you've given us? He said, you know, I could go to the king and speak on your behalf. Or I could go to the general of the army and speak on your behalf. You know, maybe you have a neighbor you don't like. I could speak to the general. Or maybe, you know, there's a policy that you don't have a good opinion on. Maybe you want that change. I could speak to the king. And with that great opportunity, what does she say? She says that I dwell among my own people. She's content. When you read this phrase, it's not a boastful thing. It's not begging for anything. She says, you know what? I'm good where I'm at. Where I'm dwelling, where I'm at, I'm happy. And if you were to turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 6, you would see that with godliness is contentment. Here's a woman who had what she had. She was blessed by being married to her husband. She had great possessions and such. But she wasn't out seeking for things. You know, if someone would come to me and says, hey, I could give you 5 minutes of the president's ear, I would take it in a heartbeat. I don't know what I would say, but I would take it. Or he said, hey, I can get you interaction with the general of the U.S. Army. I can think of some fun things to do, maybe a helicopter ride or something. I don't know. But here's this woman who has this great opportunity to be blessed. And she says, you know what? I'm good. I dwell among my people. We're in peace. I can be a blessing to them. They're a blessing to me. And so what happens? Verse 14. And he said, what then is to be done for her? And Gehazi answered, verily, she hath no child, and her husband is old. And he said, call her. And when he had called her, she stood in the door. And when he said, about this season, according to the time of life, thou shalt embrace a son. And she said, nay, my lord, thou man of God, do not lie unto thy handmaid. It's kind of interesting that this woman, there's a fear. There's a fear of this is too good to be true. And she's saying, and we see that this is a desire of hers. And when she says that, don't lie to me, only speak the truth to me. It's almost like, Elisha, this is too good to be true. How can you mess with my mind and tell me that I'm going to have a child when my husband is that old? Don't mess with me like that. And what I found interesting in this text, that she had some fear, maybe we can even say some faithlessness, but yet God still blesses her. If you look down at verse 17, the very next verse, and the woman conceived and bare a son at the season that Elisha had said unto her, according to the time of life. And isn't it just interesting how here's this woman, she's trying to faithfully serve the Lord, she's trying to do what is right, and Elisha says, you know what, God is going to bless you with something that is impossible for you. And she said, why are you trying to mess with me like that, Elisha? You know, I don't know, they were really close, and they always, you know, stabbed at each other a little bit, you know, make some fun of each other, I don't know. But she's like, don't mess with my heart like that. This is serious, Elisha. When I see this text, I see this response, I do see a desire to have a kid. Because she wasn't like, oh, okay, whatever. She's like, no, don't mess with my dreams like that. Don't mess with my heart. But yet God blesses her anyway. God blesses her faithfulness to serving him. I haven't had the experience of knowing what it's like to have my own child, but I was there for when my nieces were born. And it was very neat to see my sister's interaction of when she held her kids, seeing my mother holding her grandkids, seeing my father holding one of his granddaughters, and seeing my brother-in-law holding. And just, you know, I know Pastor mentioned this in his message, just the joy of a mother when they get to hold their child. And even today, where my sister, she likes to vlog a lot, video blog, and see her interacting with her kids, and just the joy that she has in enjoying being a mother. And I can imagine that here's this woman who hasn't had a child, and then she's blessed by having a child. It's like, oh, this is such a great blessing. I am so blessed of the Lord. But this is not the end of her story. Her story does go on. You look at the next verse. In verse 18, it says, "And when the child was grown, it fell on the day that he went out to his father and to the reapers." Everyone disagrees about how old this child is. He's old enough to walk. He's old enough to talk. He might be old enough to work. So the range that people put, he's at least 4 to whenever. I would put it 4 to 12. Not because I'm an expert, it's just my opinion. But he's old enough to talk, he's old enough to walk. And so he goes out and he said, in verse 19, and he said to my father, "My head, my head." And he said to the lad, just like what every father would say, "Carry him to his mother," right? So he goes out to the field, he's watching the reapers work, or he's out there working with him, and he goes out and he says, "Oh, you know, my head, it kind of hurts a little bit." And what does the dad say? "Oh, go see your mother, she'll take care of it," right? Just like what fathers do. Or, you know, like when my dad would say, "Yeah, rub some dirt on it, you'll be fine." It didn't work for me, I can tell you that. And so what happens next? That this child, he maybe the heat from the sun, maybe working too hard, we don't know, it doesn't really tell us. But look at verse 20. "When he had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat on her knees till noon and then died." I can only imagine what is this mother going through. Here's this woman faithfully serving the Lord, blessing the people who are serving God, built this house for this prophet, and this prophet gives her a gift that she didn't ask for. She got a blessing that she wasn't even seeking. And remember her response where she said, "Don't mess with my heart like that. Don't lie to me, Elisha." But yet God did bless her with a child. Remember, this child came from the Lord. And so she receives this great blessing, and then all of a sudden, it's taken away. And as you continue reading the story, you kind of see some interesting reactions to what happens here. Look at verse 21. "And she went up and laid him on the bed of a man of God, and she shut the door behind him and went out. And she called to her husband and said, 'Send me, I pray thee, one of the young men and one of the asses, that I may run to the man of God and come again.'" As you're reading this, what you notice is she's not telling anyone the child's died. The father seems absent-minded about this, because look at verse 23. "And he said, 'Wherefore wilt thou go to him today? It is neither the new moon or the Sabbath.' And she said, 'It shall be well.'" So the father, he's not being a bad father in this picture. That's not it. I think he doesn't know the child's died. Because can you imagine? Here's this older man who finally has a child because of a miracle done by God, and now the child's gone. And so it seems like she's kind of hiding the fact that the child has died. And she says, "Oh, I'm going to go see Elisha." And he's like, "Why? It's not the Sabbath, or it's not the new month. It's not the time for us to go and worship. It's not the time to go and, you know, hear some preaching. Why are you going to go see him now?" And that phrase, "it shall be well," is the Hebrew word shalom, peace. And I kind of struggle in my mind. I don't know where she's at. I don't know if she's just keeping it together right now. You know, I've seen this with my mother. You know, when my dad was going through cancer, and we would talk with the doctors, you know, my mom would be there just, yep, listening, yep, okay, yep, we're going to do this, we're going to go through this process, okay, write down all these notes. And then probably about by the time we got to the car, breakdown. And I can only imagine that this is what this mother's going through. She's like, "All right, it's time to go to action. It's time to do things. We got to do something about this." And she goes to her husband, and she says, "I got to go." And he says, "Why?" She said, "Shalom, peace." At the least, she's at least thinking about the peace of God. She's at least thinking about the peace that comes from the Lord. Shalom. And we're going to see she's not keeping it all together this whole time. Verse 24, then she saddled an ass and said to her servant, drive and go forward, slack not thy riding for me, except I bid thee. So she went and came unto the man of God on Mount Carmel. And it came to pass, when the man of God saw her far off, that he said unto Gehazi, his servant, behold, yonder is the Shunammite. Run now, I pray thee, to meet her, and say unto her, is it well with thee? Is it well with thy husband? Is it well with thy child? And she answered, it is well. Shalom, peace. And this is where you see her starting to break down, where she has it all together. Verse 27, and when she came to the man of God to the hill, she caught him by the feet. But Gehazi came near to thrust her away, and the man of God said, let her alone, for her soul is vexed within her. That word vex is the word mara, which if you listen to Pastor Andrew's sermon, means bitterness. That her heart is torn apart. It is bitter. Not talking about her attitude, but that she is in bitterness. You know, when you eat something bitter, it affects your mood, right? It changes your personality. I don't think this is a bitterness unto sin. I think this is a bitterness of reality, that she is in a bitter situation. Isn't it interesting how when she spoke to her husband, she said shalom. When she spoke to Gehazi, she said shalom. But there are certain people when you meet, when you're trying to act tough and keep it together, all that breaks away. I remember at my dad's visitation service, you know, we're standing in front, we're meeting a lot of the church people, you know, we're trying to keep it together and such. And then I'm pretty sure it was Pastor Garris. Pastor Garris was a missionary in Quebec, Canada for at least 40 years, if not 50 years. Very close friend. He was Grandpa Garris to me. And as I'm acting all tough, like, yep, I'm good, I'm good. As soon as I see Grandpa Garris coming through that door, you just go up, and thankfully he was a very big man. I could go up and give him a big old bear hug without breaking him. I think that's what this woman's going through. She sees the man of God, the one that gave this promise to her. She just breaks down, and it's okay. I can speak. I can speak from watching my mother going through trials like this, where she's kept it together, being really strong. And many times I would confront her, Mom, it's okay. It's okay to break down. It's okay to be real. Because what happens is that we hold on and we try to be strong and put up that front. And I understand that that's good. But you're a real human being. You're a real human being that hurts. And I'm not saying that you just lose all control of your emotions and you just let it all out one time, right? But it's okay to let it out. And who does she go to? She goes to the closest person she knows who's closest to God. Who do you go to in your trials? You know, in our days, sometimes when we have problems with our kids, we try to find a psychologist. We try to find medication. We try to find Dr. Phil. We try to find someone who can help my kid, who can get through this situation, who can fix this for me. But there's only one person, and it is God. There's only one person who can comfort. There's only one person who can give grace, and it is God. And I am so thankful that my mother was the one who depended on the grace of God. It is an example for me that I get to watch, even still today. And I think we see the same thing, the Shunammite woman, who was placed in a situation she never even asked for, but she was faithful. She served. What happens next? Verse 28, then she said, did I desire a son of my Lord? Did I not say, do not deceive me? Kind of what I would say is, why God? Why God are you doing this to me? Why God am I going through this trial? God, why did you even give this to me? I think of Job who said, cursed be the day that I die. Cursed be the day who told my father that you have a son now. Because now my life is just misery. And the problem is that we get focused on the trial and we miss the next blessing. Because who gives the blessings in our lives? It is God. And who allows the trials in our lives? It's the same God. So she says, "Why? I didn't even ask for this." Then we see Elisha's reaction. What does he do immediately? He sends Gehazi. He said, "Gehazi, go ahead, run ahead of us. We're going to go and do something about this. We're going to go see if something." So he hands him his staff and says, "Place my staff on his on the face of the child and see if that does something." Doesn't work. And the Shunammite woman says that, "I am not going to leave here until you come with me." Have you ever prayed a prayer like that to God? "God, I am not going to leave your throne room of grace and mercy until I know you're with me. That I am not going to leave your presence until I know that you are blessing me, that you are encouraging me." And I hope you're starting to see, why does God allow trials like this? Because it's supposed to draw us to him. James chapter 1 tells us that the trying of your faith worketh patience. And that, why does God allow these trials in our lives? Because it grows us. It draws us nearer to him. And that, in a way, these blessings are a blessing, these trials are a blessing in disguise. Where God has blessed us with something, then he may take something. And I don't know what it is that comes to mind, but I'm sure when you hear of a blessing that's been taken from you, maybe there's a person who comes to mind. Maybe there's a relationship. Maybe there's a situation in your life. And where you feel like that, why did I even receive this? Why did I even have this? Because it's causing me so much grief and it's causing me so much pain. What I tell you is, run to the Father and tell him. Be open with God. Tell him your struggle. Let him know. Pour out your emotions before him. But then also find a friend that will pray. We're going to skip a bunch of verses, but look at verse 33. Elisha gets to the room, which is about 15 to 25 miles away, okay? So it's not like just the next town over. It's several miles away, probably taking at least one day, if not two, to travel all that distance. But Elisha gets there, and when he enters the room, look at verse 33. "And when Elisha was come into the house, behold, the child was dead and laid upon his bed. And he went in, therefore, and shut the door upon them twain, and prayed unto the Lord." Elisha knew the power of God. Elisha traveled with Elijah and saw many miracles done. Elisha himself, through the power of God, performed many miracles. Elisha knew what God could do, but what was the very first thing he did? As soon as he entered to the room where the child lay dead, he got down on his knees and he prayed. Again, I think of Job. What would have happened in Job's situation if his three friends started their conversation with prayer? Instead of boasting what they knew. It's interesting. As a youth pastor, I like to do people watching. And I like to watch groups of teens. And one of my favorite situation is when you see one teenage girl in distress and she runs, I'm going to use a word that Pastor Andrew used, runs to a gaggle of other teen girls. And they try to offer their consolation. "Oh, you should just do this." And I don't know how this happened. I just always happen to listen on these situations. And I listened to the wisdom. Was like, "That's really the dumbest piece of advice you've ever could have given." that does not help at all the situation. Teenage girls, yeah. But what I'm thankful for, and again, referring to my mother, is my mom prays for me. You know, I my mom tells me she prays for me. She tells me how I'm praying for me, how she's praying for me, which is rather convicting sometimes. But I'm also thankful for my friends who pray for me. I'm thankful for the pastors here who pray for me. I'm thankful for a youth group who prays for me. And when you're in the midst of a trial, you first run to God, and then you run to your friends who will pray with you and for you before they try to offer their advice. Prayer in the midst of a trial. I'm not going to go through all the details of the healing, because really the details of this aren't the main point of this. What happens is that after this prayer, that Elisha, he brings the child back to life. If you jump down to verse 36, and he called Gehazi, and he said, call the Shunammite. So he called her, and when she was coming into him, he said, take up thy son. Then she went in and fell at his feet and bowed herself to the ground and took up her son and went out. What happened? Her greatest blessing turned into her greatest trial, was turned back into another blessing. And what did she do? Nothing. She went to God. And God did the miracle. But this is not the end of her story. God is not done working with her. If you go to 2 Kings chapter 8, we hear about her again. This is several years later. The order chronologically are kind of, they're not misplaced, but they're out of place here in these texts. When we get to chapter 8, verse 1, it says, then spake Elisha unto the woman whose son he had restored to life. And so we see again, this is the Shunammite woman, right? And what happens? He says, arise, go thou in thy household and sojourn wheresoever thou canst sojourn. For the Lord hath called for a famine, and it shall come upon the land 7 years. You ever feel like you just got out of a trial, and everything's great, then boom, you're right back into it again? So here's this woman who didn't have a son, then has a son, and then doesn't have a son, and then does have a son again. And then shortly after that, I mean, it could be a couple years, it could be within a month, Elisha says, the Lord's going to judge the land. The land is not right with the Lord. There's a famine coming. You need to pack up your home, everything you have, and leave. And notice there's no mention of the husband. And as you continue down, there is no further mention of the husband, most likely because he's passed away. If he was old before the child was born, he'd be really old after the child was born, right? And then after a couple years later. And so here's this lady, most likely on her own, now has to pack up her home. And if you read verse 2, and the woman arose and did after the saying of the man of God, and she went with her household and sojourned in the land of the Philistines 7 years, the enemy. She leaves her home because the people of God aren't being faithful, even though she's been, but yet she has to leave again. But the fascinating point in this is that this woman loses everything so that God can give her even more. Let's read on. 2, and the woman arose and did after the saying of the man of God, and she went with her household and sojourned in the land of the Philistines 7 years. And it came to pass 7 years' end that the woman returned out of the land of the Philistines, and she went forth to cry unto the king for her house and for her land. After 7 years, no one was there at the house. She lost it. She lost her husband's home, lost her husband's farm. She lost everything. And so now she says, hey, I left because of the famine. Everything's good now, so I came back. Can I get it back? And then we get to see what is God doing in the background. Verse 4. And the king talked with Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the servant of the man of God, saying, tell me, I pray thee, all the great things that Elisha hath done. And it came to pass that as he was telling the king how he had restored a dead body to life, that behold, the woman whose son he had restored to life cried to the king for her house and for her land. And Gehazi said, my lord, O king, this is the woman, and this is her son whom Elisha hath restored to life. You can never plan your life better than God can. We're talking years afterwards from when she first heard she was going to have a son. We're talking at least 11 years, if not more. This son is at least a teenager, if not a full a young man. We don't really know the full time span. But here she is, that as she is running, she's thinking, another trial? I got to go and beg to the king for my house back? She doesn't know that the Lord sent Gehazi to go speak to the king. And Gehazi is, and the king is like, Gehazi, you traveled with Elisha, right? Yeah, I did. Or I do. Tell me some of the things that he did. And he's probably going through all of the miracles. You know, he waxed some water, you know, it spread out. And there's other things that he did. You know, he called bears against children. That was interesting. but a better story, King, is that there was this one kid that a woman didn't even ask for. She got the kid. Then he died. And then Elisha came and brought the kid back to life. And the thought that comes to mind is, I wonder if the king asked, well, why did Elisha do that for her? Well, king, she was faithful. She was faithful to serving God. She blessed us, so Elisha blessed him. And then who comes walking in is the woman with her son. And he says, look, it's true. There she is. And what does the king do? Verse 5, and it came to pass as he was telling the king how he had restored the body of life, that behold, the woman whose son had restored life cried to the king for her house and for her land. And Gehazi said, my lord, O king, this is the woman, that this is her son whom Elisha restored to life. And when the king asked the woman, she told him. So the king appointed unto her a certain officer, saying, restore all that was hers, and all the fruits of the field since the day that she left the land even until now. She left for 7 years. She didn't work her fields for 7 years. She comes back. She gets her home back, plus all the fruit of the land for the last 7 years. I mean, not the seven-year-old fruit, because that's probably spoiled, but the amount, the extent of that. And she had to lose everything for 7 years so that God could give her back more later. Now, none of this story happens if the boy never dies. None of this never happens if the boy's never promised. And none of this happens if she's not faithful. Like I said before, my mom is an extremely loyal person. You could say she's also extremely faithful. And the extent that I saw my mother stay faithful, not just to her husband through cancer, but also to the Lord. I mean, honestly, she should be up here preaching, not me. But when you show faithfulness to the Lord, the Lord will try your faith. The Lord will test your faith. And there are trials that you're going to go through. Maybe you're in the trial right now and you're like, you know what, God, I don't get it. What did I do to deserve this? I didn't even ask for this, God. And he's saying, just wait. Because your greatest blessing has turned to your greatest trial. But I'm making it an even greater blessing for your life. I'm going to ask you to turn to... I'll tell you in a second. Why don't you turn to John chapter 11. John chapter 11. We look at two more familiar women, Martha and Mary. And they're going through a great trial. They've just lost their brother Lazarus. And one of their best friends is a man named Jesus. The man who has power on earth to make the lame to walk, to cause the dumb to speak, to give the blind sight. Surely Jesus will come and heal Lazarus. But he doesn't. Because the greatest trials in your life are meant to give you the greatest blessings. John chapter 11, and look at verse 39. John chapter 11, verse 39 said, Jesus said, take ye away the stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, said unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead for 4 days. And Jesus said to her, said I unto thee, that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God. My challenge for you today is believe in God. Because you may be experiencing the great joys of the greatest blessings that God has ever given you right now. But you will experience great trials. And they are not meant to destroy you. But they are meant to break you. Because God is seeing your faith. God is testing your faith. And God is growing your faith. And so in the midst of these trials, just to repeat the words of the Lord, said I unto thee that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God. Friends, you may be in some great trial now, and I don't know how long it's going to be for. I don't know how hard it's going to get. But I know that our God is faithful, that our God is just, our God is kind, and that our God means these things in our lives for good. How's your faith? It could be a child that's not faithful to the Lord. It could be a child that's been taken away. It could be a job that's been taken away. It could be a virus overcoming the world. How's your faith? Because God is ready to reveal his glory if you're willing and waiting to wait on him. And you know what? This wasn't the end of this woman's story. Now, the Bible doesn't tell us the rest of her story. We know she gets her land back. We know that she has her son. We don't know if she goes through any other trials. We don't know how the rest of her life goes, which is the exact same thing for us. Our story is not over yet. There's still more to come. There's still more trials to come. There's still more blessings to come. But the question is, how is your faith? And we look at this woman, the Shunammite woman. We don't even know her name. And we see her taken through great blessings, through great trials, right back to great blessings. So I encourage you, stay the course. Keep trusting in God. He has not forgotten you, so don't forget him. You are not at the end of your story, and God is preparing and working the way that you have never expected for him to bring you through your greatest trial in order to see your greatest blessing. We're going to be sending out this message on the email, and there's going to be a song included with it. The song is called Laura's Story, and it's about a woman who went through a trial with her husband with cancer. And she wrote a song, what if your greatest trials turn into your greatest blessings? It's a song that goes perfectly with this. So this sermon is not over yet either. You have homework to go and listen to the song. And the link is going to have her share her 3-minute testimony, then sing the song. And it's just a great blessing. But again, I just wanted to thank the Lord publicly for the mother that he gave me, who not just told me about being faithful, but who showed me what faithfulness is. And just remember that your greatest blessings may become your greatest trials, so that they may turn into an even greater blessing. Let's pray. God, we thank you so much for this amazing text that you have given us of a woman whose name we don't even know who she is, besides where she's from. And maybe that makes it easier for us to place ourselves in that story. Father, I don't know how you're working in people's lives. I don't know what blessings or what trials you're bringing on, but Lord, either way, we need to be faithful to you. We need to trust in you and believe in you. Just even thinking about Corona, what's going on. God, what I pray for our church is that we would remain faithful, that this may be the greatest trial in our life right now. But God, I am so excited about the great blessings coming after this. So Father, as we wait, grow our faith, try our faith, grow stronger in our faith, so that when we get to the end of this, we can look back and praise your name for who you are and for what you have done, and so that we may be ready for the next great blessing or trial you would bring in our lives. Father, you alone are worthy of all of our praise. So again, I ask, grow our faith that we may honor and glorify you. And I pray this in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.